Well, welcome to Tough Tech Today. This is our year in review live stream. And so I'd like to welcome everyone and welcome J-Mill for joining us today.
Thank you, Forrest. It's great to be here. And we thank all of you for coming out and joining us for this live stream. What we'd like to do is this is a combination of a thank you to all you, say, tough champs out there, and a bit of a Q&A, or if there are no Qs, then Forrest and I will just banter. But what we do have is we'd like to get things started, talk a bit about the origins of Tough Tech Today with Mine and Miller, and then perhaps spotlight some different parts of the episodes that we've been able to shoot to date. We have 10 episodes under our belts, and this wouldn't have been possible without so many of your support, from family to friends to the folks that we have not yet met. We are thankful for all of you coming out here for us. So for all of you, see, some of you have found it, is to hop into the chat on YouTube and feel free to send us questions, comments, etc. And so, James, Jim, thank you. Glad that you joined the session. And Malvika, thank you about the saying great work in 2020.
Great. So let's start off and talk about, the inspiration for this podcast and how it kind of came to be. I know for me, tough tech has always been kind of an interesting area. I've kind of grown up, but, always working on, frontier technologies and the combination of, engineering and physics to kind of create something new, whether it's been, work in space or biomedical projects or drones. And so I like the whole theme of this a little bit different than, I want to do something other than just a generalized startup podcast, and was at MIT, and there was a lot of stuff going on, so it made a lot of stuff interesting material. And then I don't know, J-Mill, you reached out to me, right? It was the same time I was just thinking about this and said, why don't we have lunch?
Yes. Yeah. It was a time when it was in Boston in January of all times. And it was a great time. We met, I told my mom, I said, I'm meeting my friend Forrest at a bar restaurant called State Park, which she thought she got a kick out of that. But we met at State Park. And so what we had done there is discuss the idea of how we were both sort of independently thinking about the trends toward of sort of these different kind of technologies and different kind of tech startups than your sort of usual, like sort of like Snapchat's kind of companies, that there's a different breed of tech startup out there. And we had a kindred passion for that and experience, in those spaces. And so it was basically two seeds that kind of came together to help make this work, and become what
it is. But the real reason we went to State Park was for the spicy trout sandwiches, and they were all right out. So yeah. We had to get something else. But yeah, I mean, so we came together, and this was January, and it took a lot of time, like a lot of people, to get, when you're starting a new project, to get enough momentum to finally launch. We spent a lot of time kind of, figuring out the branding and the theme and setting up a podcast is actually a lot of work. You want to talk about some stuff that went into all that?
Sure. It was a lot of work. And so if anyone's been sort of counting on their fingers, the months that had passed, the meeting at State Park was in January, and it wasn't until summertime when we were able to launch with James Benall in the DNA data storage episode one. And so in that time, we had been putting together, what's the feeling? What's the exploration? How do we capture some of what we're seeing and kind of report on it? And we settled on this idea of, well, one, it's all an experiment. But as you've seen from the first 10 episodes, is that we've been going down this path of the longer form interview approach. And so it took some time to figure out that was a way to get that balance between the professional and the personal. And then there's a course, there's a lot more that we can talk to on that, but on just say branding and what to call this thing. We had the ideas around tough tech, which is multiple meanings. One of course, it's just a difficult word out there, but two, also it helps sort of, it's an inflection on sort of that deep tech or frontier tech work. And so we started to figure out what would it look like? What would it feel like? We eventually settled on the logo, the feeling of the how some ideas, the balloons could help lift.
Yeah. Talk about that. So the logo is an anvil, right? Being lifted by some balloons. So
yes. Yeah. The power of, I think with the magic thing that we see in tough tech entrepreneurs and the folks who champion them is this, I'll say sort of a dogged optimism. And I felt that one way to present that was through balloons lifting an anvil, the impossible, because it just may work. And, you know, version one may not be the suit, version two, but version N, we may eventually get there. And so we're seeing that through some of these awesome folks that we've had the honor of being able to sit down with and talk to. And so that's where we want. Tough tech today is also about tough tech of the future. And so looking forward, how can we sort of add more ideas into this system to lift even bigger anvils, save the world and the worlds beyond.
So in the podcast, we kind of broke it up into two different types of guests. So we basically have our tough tech entrepreneurs. These are the people that are in the trenches, really hyper-focused on their one technology. They're probably going to be at it for like 10 years to make it a reality. And then we also kind of reached out to a different category, more of the support system of tough tech. Do you want to talk about, what exactly that is?
Yeah, the support system around tough tech is, well, let's see, we could sort of break it into a couple of different sort of key stakeholders here. And we had mentioned some of this a bit in one of the prior episodes, where we have sort of the entrepreneur, of course, that helps make all this come together. Yet there are support systems. And one of those being, say, the academia side, the academic researchers, university support systems that are out there. Then there are other folks like government, the regulators, and folks that are helping to be able to clear a pathway to make this feasible. There are also the corporate folks and the other, so the bigger established businesses that provide R&D funding, they provide big ideas, they provide some really great folks that can really execute on an idea that may not necessarily have the most way out there disruptive ideas. Some of those don't always come out of the corporate environment. They come out of the smaller sides of the ecosystem oftentimes, but they have folks that can really manage a project. And finally, there's another stakeholder, and those are the folks with the risk capital. So you're from the angel investors who is like that first person who saw the scrappy entrepreneur and this weird idea, and like, you know what? I'm gonna bet on you and help you that way, all the way through the venture capital folks and up to the bigger types of classes of investors. And so these are all different members of those that innovation ecosystem and folks that we want to be to spotlighting on the show.
And it's really growing. I think one of the most exciting things is that recently there's been more payoff for tough tech to that risk capital. So I mean, When you think of tough tech, like there's nothing that defines it more than like Elon Musk's spread of companies, right? Like SpaceX, Tesla, that's tough tech. And now those are really highly valued companies. So, and none of them were overnight successes. They were long periods of time. So I think for the future, there can be great returns on tough tech. In fact, exceptional returns, because once you're an established company, the barriers of entry are so high. Jamil, do you think that realization is also happening on the corporate VC side?
Well, I'd say so. And corporate VC is a different class, and but what you see on corporate VC is that realization that. The big companies don't always have the best ideas, and because ideas are not defined by any sort of one area, no one has like sort of a monopoly on that. And so there are some liaison programs some better than others. Some are thinly veiled attempts at just being like finding like sort of M&A opportunities, mergers and acquisition opportunities. Others are a little more serious in terms of we're providing funding and sort of an open door, like, okay, startups, we welcome you in to use our awesome instruments, our lab equipment, et cetera, and without strings attached. And so that can be really helpful because then you get the people interacting without the burden of, say, we're trying to figure out all this IP stuff. We're trying to figure out, is this legally and strategically valuable to all the parties involved? That'll emerge out of that interaction with people. So we see some different models of that. Now I see in the group, our chat, Malvika has asked a question for us. Would you like to address how she asked about how have we selected folks to feature on the podcast?
Yeah, well, step one is people that reach out and respond to our emails. But obviously we're starting with our really strong network, from being part of MIT and our other groups and organizations, and then reaching into those people that we know that are solving the really tough challenges. And we know a lot of these technologies are stuff that recently came out of labs. Some in the very early stage. I mean, our very first episode, right, was James Bainall and talking about his PhD research that's being turned into a company for DNA data storage. And I mean, that was a great first episode. That was actually super interesting for me. This is the thing that's so exciting about this stuff, is it's so interesting. Some of the conversations, I think my fond memory of that conversation was how like the world is going to run out of enough silicon to actually store the world's data. And that actually blew my mind. And you think about how much data we're creating each day with videos and even this podcast, like, you're right, it could happen. And so stuff like, using DNA to store massive amounts of data for long periods of time at some point will be a very, economical and maybe advantageous solution. So, I've learned a lot in all these podcasts. You have any interesting memories, JML, from or big takeaways from those early shows?
The takeaway wise, wow. I mean, it's there's a lot from which to choose. And we do try to feature some of those in the Tough Tech Tuesday snippets that we come out every other week. The one that is in my mind though is just how some of these folks are so go and giving to their communities, because this is really about the communities, whether it's a startup ecosystem or just literally like the folks that we interact with on a daily or weekly basis. And so when we learned about how the founder of Vita Inclinata takes some time off from saving lives with his drone stabilizing helicopter load system, that he takes time off by fighting fires. That is something that speaks to the mentality of some of these folks, is that it's really giving, and it's also exhilarating, seat of the pants flying, so to say. And so some of that strikes me as just being really, awe-inspiring. Though I don't want definitely to necessarily be in his shoes. I'm like, okay, I'm glad he's taking that load and serving his community in that way, where we serve it in maybe different ways.
The passion of our guests has really been something that has stood out. If you want to see someone that is insanely passionate about their specific topic, check out Mazdoc's episode on his mass spectrometer. He is just in love with the technology. He said once you get hooked in mass spectrometry, you never get out. And just the energy that he exudes while talking about this topic is just something that's just amazing.
It absolutely is. So, I mean, going forward then into 2021, Forrest, do you think that, like, is there a certain type of person or role that he or she has that we think would be sort of better to feature on the show? Malvika saying, when's Elon going to join the show? Elon Musk.
I mean, if someone's got his phone number, I'll give him a call. He's an example of like a uber tough tech entrepreneur. And I know there's other ones out there. We interviewed Sujal Patel, and He's a two-time founder, a first-time Tough Tech founder. But as far as like Uber Tough Tech founders, you know, we haven't seen that. But, you know, I really enjoy, you know, I just enjoy the talks, especially with the technical founders of the company that are really, you know, the driving force behind this. I know technology push, sometimes you got to be careful with that. But as far as, you know, the context of the podcast, those people are great guests.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that maybe going forward, we may be digging deeper into some of the areas that are a little bit more uncomfortable for Forrest and for me as you, the you know, sort of a Tough Champions and other folks who are enjoying the show, sending suggestions of who to talk to. I know that we've started to get a list of some great suggestions in biotech and sort of like global health, drug delivery, that kind of realm. And so I think that's going to be something that's really exciting to dig into. Maybe we'll be able to have some sort of guest co-host that will help bring some more of the domain expertise where Forrest is, you're many things. And one of those is like Captain Space Man in the nicest of ways that, you know.
Yeah. So I have a bioengineering degree, but I don't know anything about biotech.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's absolutely, I think a cool way that we can go. Some of the folks, like, I mean, we definitely absolutely focus on entrepreneurs, and maybe our sort of mix of interviewees is probably like, you know, half or three quarters toward entrepreneurs, and then, you know, the rest being sort of investors and other folks. But someone who I really enjoyed the interview with was Katie Person. And so she is, you know, background in U.S. Army acquisitions, and now is working with the MIT Innovation Initiative on their dual use ventures programs. And so she gives not the entrepreneur perspective, but she's instead the person who works with so many entrepreneurs to help sort of connect them throughout the government, throughout the Department of Defense, et cetera, as well as throughout some of the academic linkages, be it at MIT or beyond. And so seeing some of these crucial people that are connectors is something that really, I know it, in my life, and I'm sure in Forrest and yours, where there's been some folks who may not have, you know, the headliner, you know, the name, or, but they're the ones who are really helping to really kind of coach and mentor, bring you into the fold.
And what I like about, you know, like Katie too, I just talked about the passion of some of these founders, but she has a lot of passion behind what she does as well, because, you know, her experience in the military, you know, serving our country, has really motivated her to help companies serve these dual use purposes. So you can find the passion everywhere. And I think that's what makes a good guest, you know?
Yeah.
And with the passion, I mean, you have to have it, due to, you know, the challenges of anything in life, but starting a company, especially one that's tough. Jamil, do you have anything that kind of sticks out to you, you know, about, the founders or any of our guests about, you know, how they dealt with adversity, any tips that kind of stuck out in the interviews?
Well, one is with Warren Hoffman. So this was a venture partner at MIT's The Engine Venture Capital Group. And something that he faced, sort of the clear and present danger as he was being flown into Iraq during wartime. And so, you know, flying into Baghdad and experiencing the maneuvers that need to be done to be able to get a plane safely in there, and then living and experiencing on the ground, bringing that first person experience, I think is something that is, well, we could tell from him that it was really influential on the way that, I mean, basically on his life in terms of how he chose things. We also see some of those other sort of pivotal plot points coming from, you know, again, sort of being in Clonada, seeing a very important person being that did not survive because of issues related to helicopter safety, et cetera. So there's a lot there. Now, I'm curious, Forrest, what you think of maybe where did we miss the mark, or where did we not quite ask enough questions to really to dig deeper to that work.
Oh man, the reel. These are like these are like tough interview questions, you know. Well, you know, it kind of just, you know, it depends on the guest, because every guest is, you know, is different and kind of has a willingness to share, you know, different levels of things. And, you know, I guess sensing that out, you know, beforehand and getting comfortable with the guest is something that you can always do to kind of improve upon. On that note of like getting to the, you know, the real kind of uncomfortable things that sometimes, you know, guests and founders had to deal with. What were some interesting things you learned about that? I can think of, you know, a Caleb Carr, right? Like he basically learned that he had to teach himself how to take a break from things, right? And take weekends and be kind of disciplined and stuff. Do you have any other tips or difficult situations that came up in the interviews?
Boy, I mean, in terms of, I'll also focus on maybe a little bit sort of mentor style of tips. It seems that, I mean, it comes down to finding, well, I'll say it's two ways. One is finding folks to help on your vision. We're seeing evidence around that. For example, with Caleb Carr again, where it took a university instructor to ask him a very simple question of like, why aren't you going to solve this problem if you're thinking about it so much? So just being provocative and finding folks who are willing to provoke you in a good way, as like a developing sort of way. The other side of this is seeing that folks they may not be looking to have a fire in their belly, but something starts to condense with a lot of these, like the focus that Mazdak has on in terms of being sort of addicted to be building a mass spec the way he's doing it and redeveloping it in the process is awesome. Now, a lot of you may, like listeners, may be like, well, I don't have like this, like the calling. Like it would be awesome to have the calling. It could be. But we're also seeing that some of that sort of generalist ability and that open-mindedness to be able to be willing to listen to an episode that's about a field that's completely out of your ballpark, whether it's about medical devices or venture capital or whatever, that willingness and curiosity is something that I think also can be traced through these movers and shakers of industry that we're speaking with, that they're willing to see a future that could be, not so much the future that, or the present that we have. And I think this speaks to Malvika's question, because she has asked, like, what's the impact of COVID been on the tough tech ecosystem? I think there's a lot to unpack there for us. Would you like to take a first pass at that?
Yeah. You know, it's been varying depending on the companies. I think that because a lot of these startup companies are, running on venture capital rather than necessarily, you know, customer sales, some of them haven't been too affected, you know, by COVID, because they're, you know, still building and developing the product. Other people, like, you know, with Caleb Carr and Vita and Glenada, I know that he used the basically all the bills and stuff that went through, and some of the delays that happened with COVID in Congress allowed him to go down to DC and actually move the needle on stuff to actually get a requisition written in for his technology. So, you know, for him, it's been helpful. I know that Justin Cyrus of Lunar Outpost, you know, he said that, you know, it might have been a little challenging on the commercial side, but he was still able to keep, you know, all of his employees employed. And, you know, I think overall, you know, people weathered the storm, but definitely did put some, you know, put some pressure on raising money.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we saw when we spoke with Will Dixon and Trini Torres of FedTech, we saw that from their view, like that there's a quite an abundance of like say technologies that are coming out of the DoD or other sort of federal groups, and there's quite a mix of folks who want to help try to figure out how to commercialize that. So this is a two plus sided marketplace, which can be hard to get started, but we're seeing like they're in a position to be able to sort of match make, and it looks like from what we're seeing is that is growing. Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, economically where we're in sort of a weird situation with the pandemic and stuff, where like, you know, like Wall Street's like doing well, and yet, you know, in other parts of the nation and the world, it's
mom and pop businesses don't trade on Wall Street.
That's the thing. Yeah. And so I mean, if there's any, looking back at like, say, our more recent sort of economic issues back in 2007, 2008 with the Great Recession, where that was a time of hardship. And I felt that very much personally, my family did. And yet it was a time for, we'll say a renewal, a birth of, if you will, of a lot of companies that have grown up and become, let's say, you know, for lack of better words, awesome today. And it came through some of that hardship. And even in my, you know, my personal life we started to get, I'll say, starting to create something new because it was a way, you know, possible way out of the economic hardship of that time. And so we may be seeing that in 2021, 2022, where probably going to be economically weird, highs and lows, of course, that we may see some really fine new business models, new technologies, and really amazing people coming out of this. I sure hope so. I'm very optimistic, sort of bullish on that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a question from Gabriel asking, what is our view on the electric freight industry? And that's an interesting question. Forrest, would you like to respond first to that?
Electric freight. So I'm assuming this is like electric semi trucks. I guess you could have electric boats too. I don't know. But
can we do electric trains? Right.
Yes, there's electric trains everywhere.
High torque.
I don't know about cross country, but you know, from the airports for sure. Yeah. All the trolleys and stuff. But I think that it's an interesting technology. I'm not an expert in all of the economics of, you know, battery discharge and efficiency of all of that. But given, you know, if you have a green way of producing the electricity, it could be pretty exciting. And I know that Tesla is definitely looking into it. So who knows? I'm not an expert on that, though.
Yeah, I think, you know, we are seeing significant amounts of electrification of so much, so many things. And so that, as you know, I guess I say, as long as we, the society, don't go overboard, which I think we're far from doing, but electrification can solve a lot. Because generally lower maintenance costs, generally like fewer, because there's like fewer moving parts. But then again, we can't supplant like internal combustion engines completely, because they do work really well in some environments. Yeah, they're pretty noisy, but they deliver a lot of power, and it diesel, kerosene, etc. are fairly convenient to move around. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of sort of infrastructure to handle that, compared to say trying to bring in a hydrogen system or something that does require some changes to protocol on the path toward electrification. This also does speak to the importance of a low carbon future, that our current trajectory is not super great as a species. So how, like, we can electrify everything we want, and maybe we could with current technologies, but where are we getting this electricity from? What are those energy sources? If we're still burning a lot of coal, our society's going to pay for it, and maybe in terms of like lung damage and environmental damage. But we can't get rid of all of it completely. We need to go into that I'm soapboxing. Soapboxing. Here, it seems like we need to get into more of a energy mosaic.
Multivariate problems. So.
Yeah.
So, but there's lots of exciting technologies. I mean, one technology that could solve the energy supply problem, which is a company that's down at the engine, is working on fusion power plants. And their key technology is these magnets that basically help them contain everything. But, you know, that could be really big. And people are making big bets in tough tech on fusion. So who knows? I mean, fission could do a lot of good on the carbon impact side of things, but fusion would be pretty awesome. And then we'd have a reason to go mine helium-3 on the moon, which would help out Lunar Station and, you know, some of our other companies. So, but now we're getting really tough. That's like extra tough tech. That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, yeah, I mean, we're seeing some of the news of being able to, you know, perhaps getting sort of fusion nuclear stuff at nuclear power sources on the moon, which it's could be. I mean, I guess in some ways it's kind of there in some ways, but it's a potential hot button issue. Need an educated public around that. We have, in the meantime, we have folks like Lewis Perna with Axion Systems building these really like sort of low power, high efficiency electro spray propulsion systems to get satellites, which our modern terrestrial lives in many ways depend on satellites doing our jobs for telecommunications and stuff. And so he's building ways to make smaller satellites, so fewer materials, more of them.
I mean, I really enjoyed that interview. If you're watching this, check it out on our channel. It's called Satellite Propulsion is Tough. It's by, we interviewed Lewis Perna, and it's a cool story, cool interview. They had a technology that was in the Space Propulsion Lab at MIT, and just given the constraints of being a university, they weren't able to take on and service commercial customers, even though there was actually demand already there for their thrusters. And it's neat about how much you can do with very little. So it's a very tiny technology, right? Just putting tiny bits of ions out there. But really kind of it's the story of miniaturization and tiny pushes to make big changes in satellites. But that's a cool podcast. I definitely check that one out. You got any other ones that people should go check out? All of them, of course.
We always ask you to like subscribe and comment. And I think something that we'd like to really encourage is for 2021 is to foster the conversation. And so we're all ears to be able to find ways to so that you feel comfortable being able to send questions or topic areas, even suggested guests, so that then we can try, you know, spotlight what is interesting to you, while also sort of maybe keep working some of our magic and finding some really other cool folks sort of out of the blue to come on to the show. We have a couple questions, and I know we were a little bit past the half hour mark with this show, so maybe we'll answer a couple of these questions here, and then we'll call it a wrap.
And wish everyone Happy New Year. So,
yeah, of course, yes. So before we do the official sign off, I see Gabriel had a question on terms of carbon regulation, and I just want to make sure I get everybody's questions here. Gabriel asked about carbon regulation, and then Malvika said about some of the classic tough tech hubs. What are some up and coming hubs that we see? So these are great questions. Carbon regulation, we're seeing more of that around the world. Say France, I forget the names of the specific programs, but France has a program where they sort of tie sort of investments to being sort of offsetting of carbon over, you know, 10 to 30 year timelines. We see Tokyo recently announced, not Tokyo, but broadly Japan, a sort of 2050 target for carbon. And so we're seeing these regional, perhaps bigger than regional clusters of carbon concerned regulation, and so that is going to be absolutely helpful to get the sometimes fast, sometimes slow wheels of commerce to start to accommodate that. Forrest, would you like to comment on the carbon regs?
I'm not an expert in this area. I have talked with a lot of startups though that are interested in this space. There's a lot of interesting problems to solve in carbon trading for actually like verifying that some of these things are done to reduce carbon, with regards to understanding the uptake of carbon in the forest using drones. There's just a lot of interesting things to explore that are more of a result of the regulation than a technological advancement. So I'd say just keep an eye on that. And the other question that we had was for up-and-coming hubs for tough tech. And I don't know. I always like to say Boston's definitely a hub. I know Austin is getting big. I mean, the big news right now is all the companies moving out of Silicon Valley because the place is locked down. People can't do business. Tesla's going to move out to Texas. And so there's going to be a lot of shift of where people do business coming up. And that's going to change, where the skill sets are for different things. Jamil, what do you think is going to be the next big hub? Where should I start buying my real estate?
Parts of Europe, because now with some of the way that the immigration policy is, and like say you with a US-centric approach, the way immigration policy is a little bit in flux, a little bit is kind of putting it mildly, but also because of the pandemic, we're just not traveling is not such a good idea. That we're in Europe, we're getting a lot of folks who've kind of repatriated back to their motherland that may have been in the US like because of opportunity, et cetera. And now that's either not feasible or don't need to as much because of work from home. And so we're seeing then that you get more folks who are living where they want to live, with who they want to live, and they're really good at what they do. And so, for example, throughout Europe, where we now we may be then seeing the tip of an iceberg of some really awesome tough technologies being commercialized there, and so I'm really excited about what that can bring, because we don't need San Francisco to be like the global hub. We don't need a Boston, or we don't even need necessarily a U.S. One place to be the hub. It's we all can benefit if this becomes more of a global thing. And so the pandemic has helped, and the technologies that we have at hand, something even as something like Zoom, that's now an everyday thing, has made it more feasible for people to live where they want to live instead of where they have to just get the paycheck. And so hopefully that will increase, over time, the net happiness quote, net happiness quotient.
I don't know how you measure that, though.
Hey, I don't know.
You're not helping me decide where I need to buy land.
Small Asian nation that's figured it out. Yeah.
Europe. But is there any particular place in Europe, or are you just thinking just in general distributed?
I'll say the French countryside.
So, that's where you want to be.
Bob Ross, picture perfect.
You want to be living on a winery in France right now.
It's beautiful here, too. maybe a distillery in Kentucky.
That would be good too, Wow. Well, do we have any other questions from our guests?
We do. So from Jim, hi Jim. Jim is right. I'll read it verbatim. He said, "Your show does an excellent job at presenting cutting edge technology developments." Thank you, Jim. And simultaneously, he writes that I also view you two as connectors in the business community. Additional comments on that future? It's a great question, Jim. We connect with folks to have them on the show, whether they're our friends or strangers that we have not met. And so hopefully that becomes aware that way that we can contribute, not just through producing the episodes and the work that takes, but being able to help in many ways. Forrest, would you like to say something more eloquent than I did?
You know, not in a formal sense. You know, we don't have like our, you know, jobs.toughtechjobs@toughtechtoday.com yet. But tough jobs, it's like dirty jobs, but you know, clean but hard. I've definitely I've been able to send my podcast for example, I have MIT students interested in, you know, that I mentor for Sandbox program. It's a grant program from MIT for startups. And I've said, yeah, you're interested in dual use ventures? Well, reach out to Katie Person. You want to know what she's about? Here's an episode. I send the information along. So it's definitely helped me learn different people in the industry and, help connect those who I talk with. So, but no larger plans yet that we can talk about.
We're in the Skunk Works. Well, thank you so much for your questions and engaging with us. We really appreciate it. What I want to do as a final little surprise thank you is I have the Tough Tech Today flag. Okay. So I want to fly the flag. So here, it's almost too big to get on the screen. Here it is. Can you see
there,
that?
There we go. There it is. We have
it's
flags
a big
now.
Flag. Yeah.
It's store.toughtechtoday. So, just kidding. We don't have a store yet.
We don't have the swag, but if you want some, if there's a will, there's a way. So if you really want a big flag to fly, then we can hook you up. But thank you all so much. And happy holidays. Stay safe out there. Yep. And we really appreciate it. It means so much for you when you tune in, when you comment. So thank you.
Happy New Year's, everyone. Please like and subscribe. And on the count of three, 1, 2, 3, stay tough.
Stay tough.
Did you not know how to? All right, everyone. This is live. We're going to do it again.
Yeah.
Camera's blurry. All right. Count of three, 1, 2, 3, stay tough.
Stay Woo! Tough.
All right. Happy New Year, guys. See you in 2021. Right. Thanks.
Thank you.